So we will move on to item number 8. Madam, from the Behavioral Health Division, Madam Clerk, please see that item.
From the Director Department of Health and Human Services, providing a verbal informational report regarding staffing at the Behavioral Health Division. This item is informational only unless otherwise directed by the committee.
All right. Good morning.
Good morning. Madam Chair, Supervisors, I've been asked to present information regarding staffing at the Behavioral Health Division, and I'm going to make the assumption that this is in response to some issues that had been identified by the Nurses Union and by Ask Me in terms of the number of what's called mandatories that we have done in the Behavioral Health Division. So that's kind of what I will be discussing. If there's certainly something else that you are interested in hearing about, I'll be happy to discuss those issues as well. We had a bad month in December in terms of the numbers of mandatories that the division was forced to institute. Just in terms of definition of what that is, a mandatory is when we have one of our nurses or our CNAs that we are mandating to stay for an additional shift. This is something that we only do in when there are no other options, and we do it in order to provide adequate staffing for the facility. This is something that every healthcare system does. They all have the use of mandatories as part of their, it's within their capabilities and their use is depending on the facility. Nobody likes to do mandatories. Nobody likes to receive mandatories. It's something that's absolutely openly acknowledged. People have lives, people want to go home, and when they hear that they're being mandated to stay an additional shift, it's not information that is received well, and frankly, the supervisors don't like doing it either. So for the month of December, there are 28 shifts that we had to mandate people, and that was an increase from the month of November where we had 5 shifts that we had to mandate people. The mandating has continued into the month of January. It's my understanding that the numbers have decreased towards the later part of January. However, early January, we were still mandating individuals at a very high level. So there was kind of a confluence of factors that all in combination influenced those high numbers of mandatories that we were forced to initiate. The holidays themselves, just in the Christmas week, that accounted for almost half of the mandatories that we had to do for that entire month. We had numbers of employees that were out on family medical leave, that were absent without pay, they didn't show up to work, that called in sick, that were on some type of medical leave, and in addition to that, we had some turnover, some significant turnover in the month of December. Some of the corrective actions that we have taken historically to try to minimize the use of mandatory was we hired an agency that would provide staffing, and it so happened that agency that we had staffed with or that we had contracted with was also short-staffed for the month of December, so we weren't able to get our typical number of shifts covered by agency. What we have done subsequent to that meeting and in preparation, you know, because this is something that is a very high priority not only for management, for BHD administration, and for line staff, but for the patients as well, is have tried to establish an ongoing plan for how we're going to address our staffing situations moving forward. So we had what I felt was a productive meeting with Ask Me In with the Nurses Union in mid-January. We reviewed some of those situations. We reached an accord in that this is certainly something that we need to work collaboratively with. We need the union's help in helping encourage folks to come to work and to not utilize their, not call in or to call in if they're not going to be coming in, because it creates a significant issue when someone calls in shortly before the shift starts. Then we have to scramble to get those positions covered. We also are needing to hire more employees, so we have made a requisition that was submitted mid-January for approximately 15 additional CNAs and nurses. There is a class that is going to be actually starting on Monday of some additional staff, and those additional requests for positions have been submitted. The other piece that is a major concern is the turnovers. There's a number of reasons that staff are leaving the organization, primarily on the long-term care units, and that's because they have jobs. It's a very difficult balancing act that we have to go through in terms of, do we hire new employees knowing that our Hilltop unit will be closed over the course of this year and the Rehab Central unit will be closed over the course of next year? So there's a tipping point and we have to make the determination how many positions we're going to hire into in order to minimize those layoffs. So this was a conversation that we also had with union leadership, and again, I think they are supportive of the fact that this is a key decision that we have to make in terms of the number of staff that we need to bring in, but it's clear we need to bring in more. And we need to bring in more very quickly, so that is what will be happening. The other factor that plays into our inability to keep people on certainly is the retention bonus, and getting that retention bonus back into the picture. It's something that I hear about frequently in terms of what are some incentives that we can offer employees to stay through the closure. That would be a very helpful addition to what we could provide to our employees.
Supervisor Mayo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, one, can we get this in writing, all the things that you just stated, so we can have documentation?
Yes, sir.
Two, I would like, when you break it down, how many nurses that had to have mandatory layover, forced to work, CNNs, any other staff. Just break it down that way also.
Sure.
And talk about how much turnover that you had, also the percentage-wise of staffing, because when you go close these different units, people are looking and say, well, they're not going to have a job, so they might as well leave. And you didn't. I don't think that this plan of closing all these different units was planned out,
right,
or informed by having staff to say, "Wait, we need you here." And this is, you're talking about retaining bonuses and stuff like that. I think we are closing these units too fast, and the patients are the ones who are suffering. And what you're dealing with are the right client, the people who are willing to work. And you making them mandatory to stay over, they do have families.
Yes.
They have children.
Yes.
So what do you tell them? They have a small one at home and say, well, too bad, you got to work. And then if you don't work, you fire. And so that baby is gone without their parent. So there's a lot of concerns there.
Yes,
I'm sorry. I'm not one who wanted to close this anyway. So, but think it out. And it's hurting the people who we're supposed to serve, and now your morale at this place is down. I don't care. Whatever you're going to say now, it's not going to tell. You can tell. The morale is down. And tell me what the percentage of turnover without being fired. Just say, I got to go. Because I don't know about my job. I got to look out for my future. I got to look out for my family.
So,
okay.
I'm not disagreeing with most of what you're saying, Supervisor.
Okay.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
With the exception being is that we need to, you know, the in terms of the planning that we engaged in, knowing that this was going to be anytime you have closures, there's staff turnover. Turnover is an issue. You think about ways that you can incentivize employees to stay. A major component of that incentive was that retention bonus or the retention packet.
Madam Chair.
Yes,
when we
Mr.
closed
Professor
during
Mayor.
House code, we didn't have that big. We helped show them how they can relocate in different areas. You didn't have that big turnover. They had options to say, okay, we're going to move from this place to another place, or we're going to go here. They don't have that option now. So
you're right.
The plan of saying we're closing something,
right.
We're going to move from one place to another place, or let's see about you say the retention bonus, that plan still was not said. And then now you ask in the ninth hour, can y'all come help me to maintain this?
What plan wasn't there?
Of seeing when people are leaving, where are they going to go? How can we maintain our employees? You might have a plan of saying that we're going to close. You might have that down pat.
Right.
You go to the state and say, well, come on, take us over. But they're not going to do a good job for our constituents like our employees will. So thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for listening to me.
Thank you. I'd also like to say for the record, and I don't know what my colleague's experience was, but during the budget, I did not receive one phone call from an employee. I did not get contacted by the union at all regarding the retention bonus. And so I also can speak from personal experience. Back in 1996, I was working at the New Hope Project. We were the pilot project for W-2 in the state. And obviously we knew that was going to end because we would begin to implement W-2. I became pregnant, and they were offering retention bonus, and I would have gotten money if I would have stayed. But at that point, I would have been, 7 months pregnant. I'm a single mom. What am I supposed to do? And so for me, it wasn't an option to stay until the end. And I think part of the problem that we're running into is that the economy is such that people are aware that if I begin looking for a job today, I may not be able to expect realistically to find something for several months. And so when they begin looking, they're offered something, they take it. Because to be left hanging out there in this, in this economy is ridiculous. So I think part of that is, but I just want to say for the record that retention bonuses are awesome. However, in this case, I don't think that was a key factor or is a key factor. And I know we've looked at how many people are going to be eligible for retirement and things like that. I think we would be also able to get people to stay if, like Supervisor Mayo suggested, we looked as if we had an active interest in finding them someplace else to go. And so if we were to do job fairs and things like that, I think you may be able to get, without a retention bonus, be able to get people. But the other part of that, too, is that, we had a plan and said we're going to start in January. These people will be laid off. And then in February, these people. In March, and these people. And that's kind of been fluid. And so we're not really there yet. Don't know where we are with laying people off. And so that's part of that fear comes in as well. If you believed you were going to be laid off in January, of course you're going to leave in December, because if you got offered other employment, you'd be silly not to. But now here we are in January. How many people have we laid off, and where are we? And then so what we did as a board is took a look and said, well, hey, maybe it's more important for us to give you this money back so that these closures can happen maybe when we're more prepared. And so that was our kind of thinking, is that you wouldn't need a retention bonus if we made the statement to the employees, look, this is going to happen, but now we're going to take we're going to be able to take our time a little bit better with it. So from our perspective, and again, I don't know what my other colleagues what their experience was with the retention bonus. Supervisor Mayo, you're all
I'm done.
All right. Supervisor Stemper.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for those comments. Now, the mandates, are they compensated with overtime or is it regular pay?
They're paid double time.
Paid double, okay. And do you have the number offhand of how many employees were laid off? Because I know...
Up to this point?
Yes.
One.
Just one? Okay. Is that commensurate with the update of, I believe you said it was 20 people that have been transitioned into the community so far?
The layoffs related to the downsizing,
mm-hmm.
Let's see, there was supposed to be some layoffs that occurred in 2013.
Mm-hmm.
There was one manager position that was laid off in 2013, and we were able to manage not laying off any CNAs or RNs as a result of this kind of tipping point analysis that we conducted about leaving positions unfilled, using pool, using agencies, so there were no other layoffs. And we're going to continue to try to accomplish that throughout 14. We are committed to working on a monthly basis with union members in terms of a new procedure that we're going to be instituting at the Behavioral Health Division every 2 weeks. I will be involved in the decision along with HR and our chief financial officer in terms of what positions opened up over the course of the last 2 weeks. What are we going to do with those? Each one very specifically, we're going to be very proactive about those kind of decisions.
Okay. And with this retention bonus discussion, obviously you think it'll help retain employees, but for how long? Because if the goal is to close, and that has to be, they have to know that. I don't remember anything in the plan. Well, I have to revisit the plan, but I know that's a discussion in our upcoming meeting about this plan and how important it is. However, the goal is to close, and the goal is to lay off. And like Supervisor West saying, I need a job. I can get paid temporarily, whatever the bonus may be, but I'm still going to need ongoing employment. And that's why when Supervisor Mayo said in the past there's been a plan to transition you to another job, maybe that should be part of the discussion.
Yep.
Instead of retention, transfer to employment.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes.
Madam Chair, can I?
Supervisor, Director Colon, go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Supervisors. I just want to give you a summary of the approach we're taking, which is multifaceted. One was a retention bonus, which is a very significant tool that you would have when a closure like this is happening. I mean, when you look at best practices, other places that have done this, they've always had the retention bonus in place. Again, it's just a tool to incentivize an individual to stay on as long as up until the closure takes place. But so that's a very important tool that we feel is necessary to have in place to ensure that people stay with us until the closures occur. But we're doing some other things. So, for example, we have a contract with MRA where we're trying to connect our employees to different jobs within different health care systems within Milwaukee County. These are good jobs within these existing or partner hospital agencies. So we have efforts underway to help connect those individuals with those jobs. We're also having conversations with the State Department of Workforce Development regarding different resources that are available to our employees, whether it be training grants or other opportunities that the state has in their toolbox, and getting those tools available for our employees. We're also making sure we're looking very diligently at different positions and to the extent we can. So Hilltop closes. If there's any gaps in the acute care, we transition those jobs or Central. So we actively do that. On top of that, right now, back to this mandatory thing, I think it's really, when you hear a mandatory, or you know, it's just not ideal. It's not uncommon among the hospital industry, but it's certainly not ideal. And nobody here would wants to have a mandatory. It's just in a lot of cases unfair, but it's what we have to do in order to ensure the safety of the patients that we serve. But we're doing everything we can with a combination of things from contracts to hiring. And so the balance of, well, do we hire when they might be laid off? We've taken an approach that we have to try to hire, but then just be very honest with them and say that they could be laid off and let them make that decision. So we're doing a lot of things here. Again, the retention bonus is a significant tool that we can use to help us retain people, and we'd like to try to work with you to see if we can revive that.
What does MRA stand for? You said you contracted with MRA. Who are they?
I think it's Management Resources Associated or something along those lines. I may be wrong.
Okay. And what do they actually do?
They're headhunters.
Okay, headhunters.
Well, it's a part of it, but they're also a company that does training. They do skills development. They try to network with other like organizations in whatever system that you're working on. So they're going to be reaching out to other
hospitals,
programs, hospitals, different types of organizations that utilize the types of employees that are going to be laid off. It's not just focused on the nursing staff, but it's focused on any employee that is running the risk of job loss.
Okay, so is that different than the agency that was short staffed that you tried to hire this year to fill some of the shifts? And who are, if so, who are they? Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, thank you. Supervisor Wyshon? I'm sorry, Supervisor Taylor, and then Supervisor Wyshon.
On the retention bonus, if you give it to them, I mean, can they still leave, or is it, how is it, would it be retroactive, do we have to give it back? Because, I mean, I think our jobs are essentially being eliminated in 2016. Maybe we should get a retention bonus to see if, to get us to run in 2016. No, I'm joking. But what would happen if we gave it to them, and then they, you know, left.
Right.
They don't get it unless they stay.
Unless they stay.
Yeah.
Okay.
The other issue, I believe, with our retention bonus is that really wasn't enough to kind of be that carrot that you would dangle. You know, you stay till the end, and then you receive, in essence, for most people, what would be 1 month's mortgage and or rent payment. And so you're obviously eligible for unemployment, and so I don't know. Again, that's just my.
Well, I think
what was being proposed is it was a tiered system, if I remember correctly. So if you
rate of
salary. Right.
Mm-hmm. Well.
Yeah. What, do you remember what was the percentage?
It's.
So if I make $40,000.
Supervisor Taylor has.
I'm sorry.
That's all right. You can cut me off.
No.
What is the amount?
It was 15%. Either 15% or 20% based on the level of employee, based on where you were at in the organization.
I mean, I have to agree with the chair that if you know the end is near, you're going to, even if you have a retention bonus, you're still going to have those that are going to try to find unemployment, because what are they going to do? I mean, so that's one of the reasons why I really didn't think that was the greatest idea. Thanks.
Right. Yeah. All right. Supervisor Taylor, you're all through. All right, Supervisor Weishaupt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. What we have, and I think that you guys are trying your best to try and abdicate some responsibility here and kind of blame it that on this retention bonus. In fact, I think we've heard that probably about 20 times now. But you kind of very easily glossed over the fact that the staffing agency didn't live up to its responsibilities on that, that caused the mandatory overtime. That was a failure in your administrative plan. And, you know, this just goes back to a general atmosphere that has been created not only in BHD, but across county government and the attacks on the general workforce. Why does anybody want to stay with Milwaukee County? Every other day, you're being vilified by the county executive. Your insurance premiums are going up. You know, pay increases. You know, you're vilified about asking for that, and if you get one, it's minimal at best. So, all of this has culminated in people saying, "You know what? I'm going to go elsewhere." And I think it you don't do yourself any good by coming in here and claiming that because the county board didn't want to do a retention bonus plan, that that somehow is the one thing that set this in motion. The fact is, I believe it hasn't been this change that we are trying to implement. I don't think it's been done very well, and it just simply comes down to that. And I think you, like I said, are best served by coming in and saying, hey, we've succeeded in some places, we've failed in others, and we're willing to go forward. If all we're going to do is say it's your fault here and your fault there, you're not going to get anywhere. Because I have absolutely no sympathy for anybody in the administration. They created this disaster on multiple levels in multiple different departments. And now they have to live with it. The fact is, some of us, as Supervisor Mayo pointed out, had a different idea on how things should go, but we weren't listened to, so now things are coming apart. So I just wanted to redirect that, because the county board has, over the years, has tried to put more and more money into BHD constantly. That we put capital money aside to build a new hospital. We've talked about a myriad of different options on how to provide better service for people who need it. And it has simply come down to the executive branch, whether it's this administration or others, that have completely failed in that mission. And I don't want to hear any more of this, trying to come back and blame it on the board, because that's not where it's going. And you got retention problems all over the county because of just the extremely poor way that the administration has treated the workforce of Milwaukee County in general. Thank you.
Thank you, Supervisor Weishaupt. Supervisor Bowen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First, I want to clarify the employee that you said laid off because of mandatories, and so I wanted to clarify that. You said it was one employee that was laid off so far.
So there were other positions that were, the funding was eliminated as of January 1, but those positions were not occupied. There was just one position that was...
that a person was actually in?
Yes.
Okay, and then what type of position was that? Was that a...
it was a...
It's like a direct patient, working with patients?
Management?
It was not a management.
Okay,
position.
I know the January, the management positions were slated to start beginning to be laid off.
The position was a line, it was a line staff position. I'm sorry.
Okay.
I'll
position worked directly with patients as if a CNA or a...
The position that was laid off was a position, I believe, that worked directly with residents.
Okay.
I believe it was a what's called a QMRP.
Okay.
It wasn't a CNA or wasn't a nurse.
Gotcha. Okay. Secondly, the company that we contracted with to do staffing, how much is that contract?
That is based on utilization. The contract is based on utilization. The specifics of the contract and what it is per hour per employee group, I don't have that information right now. I can certainly get that to you.
Okay. And so they didn't do their work in December. What was the repercussions of that?
Could you repeat the question, sir?
In December, we had 28 mandatories, which is almost once every day in the month of December. They didn't do what they were supposed to. What were the repercussions of that?
The use of agency staff is, in terms of the repercussions, that we just didn't have them available to us. If they don't have individuals to send us, they simply don't have individuals to send us. The consequence to that is we're expanding, we're getting another agency.
Okay.
We're getting a second agency, and we're in active negotiations with that second agency that is going to be able to provide us more dependable coverage.
Okay. And we, what's the process? What's like the timeline on that?
The negotiations are underway and unfolding right now. The timeline for the contract, it's kind of, I couldn't tell you that. I'm hopeful that it's going to be by the end of February that we'll be able to get that staff in. Issues with utilizing a staffing agency is the staff demands really ebb and flow significantly. There's just a number of clinical factors that influence our number of staff that are required on any given shift. The biggest issue is what is called a one-to-one. So if we have a resident or a patient that is required of a one-to-one coverage, that's three CNAs in a 24-hour period that we have to bring in and have them cover that shift. From day to day, we don't have the ability to plan for how many one-to-ones we're going to have in the organization because it's based on clinical need. Clinical needs change all the time.
Okay. And I assume that there are other companies, either locally or nationally,
yes,
that do this. So.
Yes, there are. That's okay. Why we're expanding.
I would see that as important to get done very quickly. You also mentioned that now the rate for some staff was double, and I wanted to understand is that for when you have to affect a mandatory, or is that just in general?
No, okay. when we if you're a CNA and your manager comes to you and says, I'm mandating you to stay for second shift, for that second shift you get double pay. That's
okay. And that happens for now, ongoing. Okay.
Part of what the contract reads.
Okay. So, and looking at the month of November, it was five. There were five mandatories.
Yes.
Is that about a normal rate of how many you'll see?
The not necessarily. That was a low month. I only went back. The October was 12. And I don't have the full month of January yet, the full report for January, but as I stated, the first week in January was pretty bad. There were 16 shifts that were mandated in that first week of January, so those couple weeks over the holidays were really tough to staff.
Okay. And because December was so hectic in mandatories, what was the communication to the employees that had to do?
There is supposed to be a script that the managers follow when they go to somebody and initiate a mandatory. So they go. It's a whole process that is supposed to be followed as they look who was mandatory last, and there's a list that has gone down who is up next for the mandatories, and then the manager has to go to that employee and essentially tell them that they're being mandated to stay for the next shift.
Okay. I'm really referring to after. So this sounds like it's the employer's fault of why there are so many mandatories in the month of December. You had individuals that had to, like Supervisor Mayo said, be away from their families. I mean, an apology is warranted, but I think we could even go as far as to pay the back pay on those individuals that did mandatories in December, and now since the policy is double, they get paid double now. Mm-hmm. I think we should be able to make up for that.
It's always been double. It's always been double.
Oh, it's always been double.
Yes, sir.
Oh, okay. But it seems like there's some either apology or something to our own employees that, especially during the holidays, I can imagine, that could be a very stressful time to for you to and I know a lot of employees love their work with the county, but I don't know if they love it that much to be away from their own families during very critical times. So the things that we need to do to make sure that we don't have a stressful work environment. That's all the questions I have. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Supervisor Taylor.
Yeah, I just wanted to touch on something that Supervisor Weishan brought up regarding the overall morale of the entire workforce due to the treatment by the administration. I mean, it's bad everywhere. And it's not just the administration. I mean, take a look at what was going on at the House of Corrections before when the sheriff had it under his control. You had people working mandatory round the clock. I mean, it was very stressful. I mean, I think we all received plenty of phone calls or emails on that situation when we were looking at having the executive take it back over. But the overall treatment of the workforce through the cuts in health care and minimal pay increases and that. But what's also frustrating is what we read in the paper or in the editorials, and it just always seems to be that the county board is to blame for what's going down at BHD. So I don't know who's feeding the press what, or even with the issues that are going on in Madison with what the state's talking about, it looks like they're always taking it away from the county board. So my question is, who runs the day-to-day operations of BHD? Is it the county board or is it the executive's administration? That's a simple question, because I'm sick of hearing that it's us. Because I know it's not. I'm not down there making decisions. Peggy, are you? No, you're chair of this committee. So who runs the day-to-day operations? And it's frustrating because I think all of us constantly see anything that good happens in Milwaukee County, executive did it. Anything bad, it trickles down to the board. So in this case, I don't have any sympathy for any of the stuff you guys are shoveling towards me, because you're trying to blame us for things that are not our fault. So that's the question I'm going to ask. Who runs the day-to-day?
Madam Chair. Yeah, thank you. Madam Chair, Supervisor Taylor. Yes, the administration runs the day-to-day operations. And so I don't want to get into the media. You have to talk to them directly on, what's been written and stuff like that. But I do want to talk to the general approach that we're taking, which is the right approach. It's a best practice approach with regards to our closures. When you look at a closure, if you look at past practices, you look at research, they happen relatively quickly. And the reason why they happen quickly is because of people leaving. Yeah, people naturally, if they know the facility is going to close within a certain time frame, they get a good opportunity. Why wouldn't they leave? So, again, and this is not to say that, we're not here saying it's the board's fault or anything like that. We're just saying that the retention is a necessary tool for us. In addition to all of the other things I've mentioned here, I talked about MRA, connecting individuals to different opportunities. I talked about workforce development. I talked about, helping us transition our employees to other jobs. There are a variety of things that we're doing here. The retention is just a tool, an additional tool. And it might not be enough of a tool to keep some employees, especially if they're going to get a significant amount an increase in somewhere else. And they got the opportunity now, they have to make that decision. So there are a variety of factors here that make it difficult to retain people. But I want to assure you that we are taking a best practices approach as it relates to how we're doing this downsizing. We've consulted with the state. We've looked at prior relocations that have been done, and we've brought all that information in, and that's the approach we've taken. This is difficult, and we're not unique in its difficulty from any closure of long-term care facilities or other nursing facilities. These are difficult, and these will be challenges we'll have, and we'll have to work through those challenges, and we'll do the best we can.
So the answer is the administration. I mean, that's the simple answer. The administration runs the day-to-day. Okay, that's and retention, sure, that could be a part of it, but that's not going to stop the people, you know, the rats leaving the ship as it sinks. I mean, it's not going to happen.
It's
a tool. But if you don't think that people know that the end is near, that they're not looking, you know, that's all I have.
Thank you very much. Supervisor Bowen, did you have something?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to touch on the retention bonuses. That's the topic of focus right now. A 15% retention bonus for a CNA, how much would that come out to?
And the retention bonus, if you could clarify for us, that's their biweekly salary, their monthly salary, their annual salary. Which one of those is it?
Yearly.
So 15%
annualized.
Of annualized? Okay.
It would be, I'm going to guess, about $5,000 to $6,000. Mm-hmm. Yes. No, please don't hold me to it. It just kind of depends
roughly
on where they're at in the organization. Is it a brand new CNA or is it somebody who's been around for a long time?
Okay. And I like more information on that directly. The other thing that was brought up was the, and it just slipped my mind. Yeah, I'll yield to Supervisor Stamp because he had his hand up too.
All right.
Thank you. Ask for some clarification.
Yes.
The information that you're looking for
regarding the retention.
Right.
Bonus.
So I know there were different classes, and I want to see what the retention bonus would be for positions at BHD. Especially for those that are working directly with patients. I want the real dollars, not percentage. I want the real dollars of what that looks like. Because my hunch is for a CNA, like Supervisor West was saying, it still might not be that significant. So if we're using the retention bonus as the stickler here, you know, I think work environment is just as important. And respect from your employer is just as important as a retention bonus.
Right.
But that seems to be the only focus. The other thing that I did have in mind is I think a lot of times, just for me personally, I will trust the administration. And if you're saying you're going to hire more people, I'll just use that. But now I really need to start seeing numbers. And if you're going to hire more individuals that work directly with patients out at the facility, how many is that? What is the plan?
So that, as I discussed, the plan is going to be continuously reviewed throughout the year every 2 weeks. We just made a requisition for, I believe, 15 regular.
Yeah, I like those numbers as well. I think that's important too. And for the life of me, I can't understand why we just wouldn't hire people on a temporary basis then, up front, and let them know this is how long, and then maybe we might renew your position after that if we're still in our transition phase of closing this facility. But to hold off on hiring, you know, and try to make do with. With a workforce that's continuing to, you know, stress out because they know that they've been at this facility for quite some time and it's closing. If we need people, we need health professionals, let's just go get them, how much ever that costs.
Certainly the plan is not to hold off on hiring.
Well, we're just doing it now is my issue.
We've hired throughout 13 as well. And we continue to hire at 13.
We had 28 mandatories in December. What I'm saying is we
five in that number.
We probably should have been more aggressive in hiring. But now it's very clear that we need to just move forward with that. I think that's all I have, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. I think also what would help us to put this in perspective is if we knew before. When did you hire MRA?
That was fourth quarter 13.
Of 13. Okay, so
like September. November. I'm not exactly sure.
And again, and I asked the question because I think it helps to put that in perspective. We had a hiring issue when we hired MRA. So it wasn't that we, you know, all of a sudden in December, you know, we had a hiring issue. It's something that you were trying to be proactive with and hired them in September, hoping to assist with our staffing levels. Because, I mean, our staffing levels have not been what they should have been, can we say honestly, for the majority of 2013?
Madam Chair, I just want to clarify. MRA wasn't to give us employees. That was to help place our employees in other hospital facilities.
Okay.
Oh,
okay. So I guess basically I think what my colleagues would like to hear, and we can put this in a report for next month if it helps, is what have we done to try to address the staffing issues that we're having, other than a retention bonus, again, because we had staffing issues before the county executive made the announcement. And, you know, for the record, he told the employees, like, I think an hour before or 2 hours before he made the announcement to Milwaukee County saying that we were going to close the facility. And at the time that he made that announcement, there was not a succession plan. There was not a plan presented to the employees that said, this is what is going to happen. So if I am an employee on that day listening to the county executive tell me that the facility that I work in is being closed, I may very well, and in fact if it was me I would, have been looking on that day for employment. And so I think that is another part of the problem that's not being addressed here, is that we should have, in my opinion, from the beginning, had a succession plan for these individuals before you go in at 9 o'clock knowing that you're making an 11 o'clock announcement to the entire county saying, we are closing this facility, this is the best whatever treatment plan for our people with mental illness, which I think most of us agree on. The problem is the order in which this was done. Mm-hmm. And so again, if it was me and I was sitting in that meeting at 9 o'clock listening to my county executive tell me that we are going to close this facility, at that point I am in panic mode, and at that point I am looking for employment. And I think that was part of the problem, is that at that meeting, I do believe that where we are now, we should have been, and we should have said, hey, look, this is what we're going to do for you. We're going to do a retention plan. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. And we weren't there. And so we caused panic within our employees. But in fairness, at that particular moment, at that 9 o'clock meeting, we already had staffing problems out at BHD. We were already behind in staffing. And so basically what we did is we compounded our problem. And now today, again, this is neither here nor there, because the issue becomes we need to do what we can do in order to make sure that we have safe staffing levels out at BHD, that we're not impeding on our employees and making them work mandatory overtime. And as Supervisor Stemper pointed out, 28 times in December is every single day. And that's a lot. And so, yes, that's a lot. And I don't think anybody in here thinks that's conducive to providing the best care for our patients. And so that's really where we are now. So for next month, what we'd like is a report on where we are now. What has been done? what can be done,
right.
And obviously we can have that the retention bonus discussion. But then the other part of that is I want to see the numbers. Where are we supposed to be? Where are we? So that we can, in regards to staffing levels. So I'm assuming, and I know this from 2004, that we did at least at one time have optimum staffing levels. And so where are we now in comparison to there? Supervisor Stemper.
Thank you. I don't know if this is part of the same report, but what is the update on the downsizing as far as individuals transferring into the community? Have there been any returns? I'm aware of one, but that was a severe circumstance. So are we on track? Are we above our goal? Are we behind? What's the current status of the actual downsizing of the patients?
And that can be a separate report. But I think that's also, that's also important to this discussion is where are we?
Right.
So as it stands right now, I know that the town hall meetings that a few of us attended in October, November,
mm-hmm.
you did lay out a plan and say this is when, management's going to go this month and this. So where are we with that? And then now with the layoffs, yes, correct. And now as you are aware, and this board is obviously aware, the county board did put the money back in for 2014 for those 12 beds. So you have a little bit more flexibility now. How are you going to optimize that so that we have safe staffing levels so that, we have time to vet this plan together. And maybe you're right on track. And you're right where you need to be, and that's great. But I think we'd like a report on that as well, mm-hmm. so that we know.
All right.
Okay, Madam Chair.
Director Colon.
Yeah, Madam Chair, Supervisor. So just to give you some specifics. So with regards to Central, we're pretty much on target, actually ahead of schedule, in terms of the number of individuals that we wanted to transition into community-based settings. We have 47 individuals at Central, so we're one away from achieving our a goal of June to getting down to 46. And then currently at Hilltop, we have 48 individuals. And the last month, it's been a little slow in terms of transitions to the community. But, that's a process. We work with family care, the state, disability rights, the guardians, to make sure that individuals are given the proper supports they need for that transition to be successful. So we're working through that process. But it's been a little slow over the last month or so, but capacity is being built. The main thing here is that we're taking a person-centered, individualized approach to all of these people. So capacity has to be built.
Right.
Next month you might see, several people transitioning into the community. But that one, it's been a little slow the last couple months, but we're going through the process and feel, we'll do this successfully and safely for all the individuals we serve.
Can you remind us, so we have 48 people currently being housed on that unit, and then what was our goal for that?
Yes, Madam Chair, Supervisors, that we would close that unit so that's all of the individuals would be relocated into the community by November.
Okay.
The board eliminated the May date. That was just a transition that some layoffs would happen if we hit certain targets, but the ultimate goal is November, and that stayed in place that Hilltop would be closed.
14.
Yes.
Okay. 14. Well, how many now have
been? With regards to, I'm sorry, what's?
No, the original question was how many have been transitioned into communities so far up to now?
Well, in the last year, we had about over 60 at Hilltop.
It was 68. Mm-hmm. 68 yeah. is the census capacity.
Mm-hmm. So 20.
68, so we're at 48, so about 20.
About 20, right. That was the same number you gave in CCSB, so it was about 20. Yep. And that's ahead of schedule.
No.
Well, it's Hilltop. It's
as long as they make it to November.
Yeah.
If in November that unit is closed, then they've made their goal. So you have from now until November, in essence.
Yeah.
So any transitions that happen before them keep us on track.
Right. But I know you had monthly goals as well, though. It wasn't just a total November 13. There was a number by a certain month.
Well, part
as you mentioned, June.
Part of what the county board budget amendment did was kind of remove those goals and just kind of said, if as long as we're done by...
For both?
For Hilltop.
Just for Hilltop.
Yeah.
Just
as long as we're done by this, by November 14th, we've met the goal. But in the off chance that we don't, we still have money for December to maintain the operations there. So.
Yeah. Madam Chair, Supervisor, the other thing I want to make you aware of is that, so we don't have control of the relocations and when they happen, because we're working through this process. Mm-hmm. We're part of the team that decides and gets the proper supports for these individuals. That's one. So I just want to make sure that, again, this is a goal, but it's within a team structure,
right?
And we want to do this right. The other last thing is with regards to the acute care downsizing. So we wanted to downsize 12 beds. We continue to analyze that capacity, and we're going through this demand capacity analysis with HSRI that will give us further insights on that and other future downsizes in the future.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. Thank you. Supervisor Schmidt?
I guess I've been kind of quiet in listening, but I go back to, and I think maybe this is where the frustration goes, or the talk about that the board doesn't move fast enough, or that nobody has moved fast enough in this area. We had Ms. Geidish, come and speak to us and had the statistics, but this is what we asked for. Maybe the chairwoman can remember. It's just 3 summers ago, we had the Special Mental Task Force Committee. I was on that. You were on that. She wasn't chairwoman there, but Supervisor Dmitrievich, Supervisor Sanfilippo was the chair. And, this is nothing new. We've had these reports that have been on the, unfortunately, on the books from 1990. These things have sat on the books. And because it's a very difficult process, we have extraordinary responsibilities that no one has. And the HSRI has pointed out to us, and we looked at that document, and we were meeting in the summer, by the way, when we're supposed to be off. We were meeting in August all the time. But be that as it may, is that because we took some serious time to look at all the discussions we've been having in today and in the last 6 months and with the budget. And I can look at extraordinary things the board has done to try to finance and to give this opportunity a chance. Now, Ms. Lucy was sitting in that chair in that summer, three summers ago in August, and we gave carte blanche in saying, if we're going to make this transformation that is the national model and we should be doing, we're doing way too much, all the things we've talked about. And by the way, we did, to say we've done nothing, well, you haven't said that, but the implication is, lots of times in media that, we have, Hilltop was, 500 over a decade ago? And then, we have gradually downsized all through these years. So we have been at least, making more than just lip service to be moving into community-based service. And, HSRI, proved just the national study is that the model, and Ms. Geidish talked about today, that's the model we're still using, and we're trying to get to these goals, and now we have someone to actually work on it. My point is this, is that we gave the administration, the opportunity to go ahead, talk to the private sector, and so much has been based upon, I guess, the complaint we have, if that's the right way to say it on the board, is that we realize that to do the things that are necessary, you have to get a complete buy-in by the private sector. You can't be moving people and you say person-centered, all the things you're doing. But you know what? I think we got a premature plan. I think we put the cart before the horse a little bit. We're saying, we're going to do this by 2014. This is going to be done. But it's so much dependent upon some things we can't completely control, family care, other things you do talk about. But certainly things we can control is what is the capacity out there in the private sector. And, we gave those goals and we gave that, we said that's your responsibility. You look at that, you report back to us, and let's see how fast we can do it. And so, you know, we have our complaints with the administration in general, as the frustrations have boiled over, okay, with the information, things we can't get. But, you know, we wanted the same goal from the very beginning, both of us, I certainly believe. I think there was political pressure because the media to maybe go it too fast. The board has done some things. We've tried to give you some safeguards. The 12 beds we talked about, we put that, you know what, you know, again, I think some of the frustration here is that we seem to discount all the things the board has done to help out. You know, we asked, we saved target case management. We saved many of the jobs through the last couple budgets before the new county executive. Previous county executive was constantly cutting into and trying to reduce, and I think prematurely again, because the private sector wasn't ready, because I guess we were always willing to pick up all these extra charges. We did all these extra things that seemingly almost no one did in this country. You know, I've been part of this process. I think as a board, we needed extra money. We needed to get, you know, tried to work on getting another psychiatrist and to get a director. I mean, we did overtures. Okay, let's extend the budget. Let's put more in there than was previously there, so we could hire, so we could do something in this area. So I guess the summary is that you're doing now what we asked a couple years ago. So I don't think we've dragged our feet, but you know what? I understand. You know, you have the responsibility from the county executive, and he gives the marching orders. You got to follow his plan, okay? But the question has been: is it a realistic plan? I mean, the media doesn't. I don't expect them to look at all the nuances and understand everything. We didn't even understand everything, but we needed to make sure that the private sector can pick up what we're not going to be able to pick up. Now we've come a long way. I think we did a long way even before this, but therein lies the problem. I mean, you know, we're just not sure that if we do have all our employees the best interests, and you know, I've gone on record, especially the nurses and stuff out there. That's a heck of a job, isn't it, to work with that population, as you well know. That's the worst of the worst, and it takes some special talents and I guess the work ethic too, to go to work every day and to know that you're not going to be appreciated, you're probably going to be abused in some way, and because people are not themselves, they're not speaking with a clear mind all the time, and you know, they're just bound to be so many of these problems. But again, you know, I've talked a little bit, but you know, I've sat your frustration for a lot of years too, a couple, and We just need to, I guess, be a little more realistic and say, yeah, here are the goals. But again, the cart before the horse a little bit again. Say the private sector, and we have to work, and we have to, we want all this community care. We want to go through HSRI. Then we have to have some availability before we do, kind of saying, yeah, we're going to be here. You know, these 48 beds are going to be gone. Well, they may or may not. We've got examples where we've had some setbacks and problems. And I'm not all blaming in this administration completely on this either. I think you're put in a very difficult position by the head administrator. And, you know, you don't have any choice. But we have some choices. We can look at it and we can see. And I'm very pleased with the way the section has gone. Skydish has all the information at her fingertips. It certainly gives a fast report, and she did smile today. Yes, that was good. But she's got a tough job. And when we get to, I wish we get this information before.
Right.
And then the administration has just made these decisions, and, you know, we're still the policymakers, and that's what it comes back to. That's why there's frustrations here. So I'm done. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much, Supervisor Schmidt. Got Supervisor Mayo, and then it looks like Director Colon has something.
Here.
Oh, all right.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Supervisor Mayo, and also Supervisor Schmidt. I just wanted to make sure I let you know that we aren't going to be pressured. This administration, County Executive Abley, myself, Jim Kubitschek, isn't going to be pressured by the media to do something. The plan that we have put forth is because we believe it's the right thing to do. The plan that we have put forth is based on best practices, evidence-based decision-making. The plan that we have put forth is providing more dignity and better outcomes to the people we serve. So we're moving forwards to that better model of care. in terms of the planning, the long-term care closure, we're doing it exactly the way it needs to be done. Now, in this instance, with long-term care closure, you don't build capacity and place individuals. We're doing this in a person-centered, individualized perspective. And whatever that very person needs, that's what will be developed for that person so that person can be successful in the community. That's the way that works. So I know in the past there was building capacity and putting people in different places. That's not the right approach. That's not the approach we're taking because there's a new and better approach. With regards to your acute care downsizing, now you're right. We do need the hospitals to step it up. And some of them have, some of them haven't, and we're having those conversations with them. But generally speaking, over the last couple of years, they've done a lot more than they've done in the past. And that what has enabled us last year to be able to downsize 24 beds. And this year, we believe we have the capacity to downsize another 12 beds. But with regards to acute, you are right. We have to partner up with the hospitals to ensure that they're willing to do take more before we would be able to downsize or close those units, because we do have to be that safety net. We do have to be that the opportunity for those individuals that might not be served in a private sector setting. So we took a very methodical approach to everything we're doing. The administration, the County Executive Abley, myself, and this administration are on the same page because we believe that this is the right thing to do for the people that we serve.
Thank you. Supervisor Mayo.
Madam Chair, you know, Director Cohn, I know it's hard in the right place, but you notice he left out in that whole equation of the county board. He said the administration, his administration, and the county board didn't have nothing to do with it. Also, when you look at the county board, have consistently tried to make sure that we have our patients, our residents, in their best interests, regardless what size of if we have enough capacity out in the area. We continue to make sure that we give them grace, our patients, our constituents. It was not trying to indignity. We made sure that when they in that place and we taking care of them, we make sure that our county employees give them grace and dignity. It was not having these horror stories that you have in a lot of private sector. But when we talk about our constituents and our employees, they work hand in hand together. I would like to know why we have not received, I have not received, anybody else on this committee have not received this this report called Disability Rights Wisconsin on Behavioral Health, so we can understand what they're looking for. I didn't receive it.
I forwarded it to you.
I did not receive it. Okay, now I'm going to ask Jay, if you forward, I'm not an email person, I'm a hard copy man. Oh. Anybody who knows me, I'm a hard copy man. So I will make sure that I get a copy of that report, because I have a number of questions, and I don't like verbal reports, that's why I stepped up, but I wanted to come back in to make sure that people understand. Again, you could have, and I'm happy that you're not the media, because the media take a pot shot at me all the time, talking about I don't look out for our patients and misquote me. I don't care what they think of me. They've been shooting at me ever since I've been here. But those patients is the ones that I'm cared about. I care about those employees, because the employees take care of those patients. And even though we come at this moment of time, we're still not on track. But you can say that you may be on track and all this stuff. Just put it in writing. Let me compare this right, what their complaints about in this report, and what actually is going on. I'd be a happy camper. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. Thank you, Supervisor Mayo. Is there anything further from committee members? All right. Seeing nothing. Thank you very much for putting this together for us, gentlemen. And we will touch back on this. I'm sorry, I do have two cards. My mistake. All right. Dave Eisner from AFSCME District Council 48 and Jeff Weber from the Wisconsin Federation of Nurses and Other Healthcare Professionals on item number 8.
We still got DRW to talk about, right?
Yeah, we do. We have one more item.
Still on eight.
Good morning, Chairwoman and Supervisors. I'm Dave Eisner from District Council 48.
Good morning.
Good morning, Supervisors. My name is Jeff Weber. I'm with the Wisconsin Federation of Nurses and Health Professionals. I am also a BHD frontline worker.
Good morning.
Good morning, Chairwoman and Supervisors. I need to address some of the comments that were made by Director Colon and Administrator Jim Kubicek, and I'm not saying this to be disrespectful in any way, shape, or form. It was reported that 28 shifts in December people got mandated. I question that number. I requested a list of my members that have been mandated in December and November and even early January, and I have not been supplied that list, so I can't tell you how many nurses actually were mandated during that time frame. However, I can tell you for a fact that December 31st was the first time I have been mandated since 1994. I was one of eight nurses that night that got mandated. Only one of those nurses, me, worked as a nurse. The other seven worked as CNAs. And on that very night, two other people, CNAs, were mandated as well. So I still find it hard to believe that only 28 shifts for the entire month of December, when on that night alone we had 10.
What night was that?
December 31st.
New Year's Eve. Supervisor,
it was shifts. I didn't say employees. Oh, I'm sorry. I stand corrected. It wasn't a total of employees. I misunderstood you, Mr. Kubicek. I'm sorry. Let's see. So we know that there's a significant staffing problem out at BHD. Going back to early summer, we had a change in our HR department, and at that time, I was told the mentality of the department was, why should we be hiring when we're going to be downsizing? And that put us behind the eight ball and slowed things down, and now we're feeling those pains right now. During the summer, with that same mentality, we lost 12 frontline employees in one pay period alone. With that kind of attrition, we can't keep up, especially when they weren't hiring. I'm told that that mentality has stopped and that they are continuing to hire. However, knowing that we have 15 vacant RN positions, more than 15 right now, I find it hard to believe that the upcoming orientation, which starts next week, has no RNs in it at all. There may be 15 employees in orientation, but I was just up our staff development office doing my annual updates just Monday, and I was told there are no RNs in this new class. With that many vacancies, why aren't they hiring? I would like to know how many RNs are being interviewed every month. If it's an ongoing problem, why aren't we reaching out and trying to hire people? I get it. Sometimes you just can't hire a certain individual for whatever reason. But to have no RNs in the orientation program makes absolutely no sense when you know we are that far behind the eight ball. Also, this summer, we used to have an on-site nurse recruiter. Her job was to hire RNs and CNAs. We no longer have an on-site nurse recruiter. We have just an HR department that does the hiring. We did have a meeting January 14th with administration regarding these issues, and we brought up some suggestions, and one of them was to bring back our on-site nurse recruiter. Currently, a majority of the RNs that are leaving BHD are not from the Hilltop and rehab programs, the two programs that are slated to close. Yes, we've lost a few people, but currently the RNs that are left there, a majority of them are long-time employees that are dedicated to the clients they serve. They are still there. Certainly some of them are looking actively because they know the end is coming. To suggest that we're having a staffing shortage house-wide related to a retention program, bonus program that has been dropped by the county board, I think is incorrect. December was a bad month for turnovers, but the majority of RNs that have left in December were from outside of Hilltop and Rehab, acute care, PCS, and the children's unit, not in the two programs that are slated to close. RNs currently get double time when we are mandated. That was in our contract language, and it is now part of the county ordinance. CNAs do not get double time. CNAs get time and a half.
No, it's based on the Fair Labor Standards Act.
So if a part-time CNA got mandated and they didn't achieve that 40-hour threshold, they get straight time. So many of the CNAs are saying no. Child care issues, other issues, and there is no incentive other than they may lose their job, and frankly, some of them are so fed up, they don't care. That is why 7 nurses got mandated on New Year's Eve to be CNAs. Certainly, we have to staff the hospital. We can't just go home. But the CNAs are being mandated at a far higher rate than the nurses. The retention bonus plan that was put forth, we feel, has some serious flaws in it, including when an employee utilizes their right to have FMLA, they are no longer eligible for the retention plan. Now, I could see saying if you're out on FML, you don't accrue any retention bonus money, but to be eliminated from the whole plan, I think is not right. I've encouraged Director Colon to take a look at the bonus plan, revise it, and bring it back to the board for your approval. We have also mentioned that to Jim Kubitschek as well in our meeting, as some of the possible solutions that we put forth in our meeting to help remedy the situation with staffing. That's all I have to say, Dave.
Yeah, so just to elaborate, Jeff covered most of my stuff, but just to elaborate on a couple points, the nurse recruiter, that was a critical position that administration made a decision. Those duties would no longer be performed by that individual, and then it was turned over to HR. Literally, besides the thinking that why are we hiring when we're closing, there were some flaws in HR that literally hiring was at a standstill from June until the fall, and then they started hiring again. Now, our understanding from the meeting in mid-January was that HR downtown had hired somebody who had a medical background from Aurora and who they were going to utilize to assist PhD with recruiting nurses. So that's, you know, a piece I wanted to mention. The overtime situation is correct. In August of 2011, the county executive board adopted the Fair Labor Standards Act for overtime, FLSA as it's referred to. So currently, like a CNA and LPN, any position not like the nurses who are, you know, have their contract extended, have to exceed 40 hours worked in a week for it to be considered overtime. So, for instance, if somebody had benefit time off during the week, just say they had 2 vacation days, and then they came to work the next day and they were required to work a double shift, they would work 16 hours of straight time because by the end of the week that would not exceed 40. And, I mean, they're objecting to that, although it's, you know, now the rule of the land as far as the FLSA. But, you know, it's a hard pill to swallow when, you know, you got daycare issues and you're taking care of family members at home and it's during the holidays, things as Supervisor Bowen spoke about and others. So The other issue was, and I brought this up back in July's Health and Human Needs Committee meeting when we presented those petitions, is that after the county executive made his State of the County address last February, and then, you know, they started holding town hall meetings with staff there, a former administrator of BHD literally demoralized staff by telling them that this was a done deal. The place is going to close. If you don't like it, go find another job. And, you know, quite frankly, a lot of staff have, and that's what they've been doing. So, I mean, you know, they're being proactive instead of reactive. And, you know, I don't know if, I think a retention bonus is a good concept. I think it could help. But based on that message that was, you know, beat down on them through probably August, you know, that's where we are now. See, Jeff talked about the RNs having 15 vacancies. We were told that the CNAs, although they have a new class coming out, were down the equivalent of 23 full-time equivalent positions as of January 14th. So that's all I have. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. All right. This was an informational report, and we will have this before us again next month. And Ms. Mapp and I will get, get it worked out. Okay. Item number 9,